This is Broadway to Brazil, the only podcast to tell the remarkable story of Corinthians Casuals FC, the English non-league club who are big in Brazil. PM on a cold and windy January evening on the artificial pitches of Wimbledon's King's College School. Corinthian Casuals manager James Bracken thanks his players after another training session of hard graft. Despite freezing conditions and no salaries on offer, 22 hardy first team players alongside around 10 reserves have made their way to this southwest London sports ground to prepare for the following weekend's fixture. Far from going through the motions, tonight's one-hour session is a high-intensity affair, offering no hint that this is a group of amateur players. No doubt the naturally competitive mentality of the players themselves has a part to play in this, but the session also falls at a critical point in the Casuals' 2017-18 campaign. Even if they had been inclined to slack off, the man in charge simply wouldn't let that happen.
I can't bear players that play a bad pass and you have no reaction out of them. They just play a bad pass, and the worst thing they do is they play a bad pass or it don't work out, whatever, and they smile or laugh. You probably can tell it gets my goat a bit.
Today, we are stepping away from the club's past and focusing very much on the present, taking a much closer look at the current Corinthian Casuals side, whose impressive recent progress is unprecedented in their modern history. In particular, we'll be honing in on the gaffer, James Bracken, as he aims to mark his third season in charge with a third successive promotion push. How is Bracken getting this group of unpaid amateurs to compete with their paid peers at the business end of the Bostic South Division? Why are his players staying at the club for nothing when they could be taking a pay packet elsewhere? And what would it mean to Corinthian Casuals to secure promotion in 2018? We'll be hearing from the man himself, as well as his players, colleagues, and a former Premier League star who recently visited King George's Field.
He has brought an incredible professionalism. So it's proof that you can. It depends how much you want to.
Just the ambition. You know, you go to certain clubs and you can pick up a bit of change here and there, but they're not saying every week, like, we need, you know, we're trying to win. And it's just the professional manner at which he conducts himself and runs the club, I think, is exceptional.
He's a top quality manager, you know. He's different from the other managers in the league that, you know, they just let you get on with what you get on with.
Yeah.
They just leave you to it. But, you know, he actually wants, he brings out the best in you.
Tonight we trained, we could have been anyone. We could have been the dog and duck. We still could have set a high standard and been demanding of the players, which we are. And, you know, it makes no odds. It makes no odds.
Welcome back, listener. Thus far, we have focused on several elements that make Corinthian Casuals such a fascinating club. Their origins and history, their identity, and the principles that guide them today. And in this regard, we're far from done, but today we want to switch our attention to recent progress on the pitch. And progress has undoubtedly been significant in recent years, especially when taking into account the various mitigating circumstances that we've touched upon so far. A club living on an overdraft, refusing to recruit players by competing with their rivals on a financial basis. But despite such progress, current manager James Bracken wants more. Because for him, only being crowned champions will do. Not even second place, which would still guarantee the club promotion, would completely satisfy the ambitious Casuals coach.
If we weren't champions, I'd say it was okay, we got up. You'll never see me say, yeah, second was great.
Ambition, drive and a devotion to the highest possible standards. These qualities underpin just about everything that Bracken does. Despite the fact that at 34 years of age, he's still very young for a first-team manager, he has the track record to back up his ambition. In his last job as youth and reserve team manager at Sutton United, James won every trophy possible multiple times. And here at Corinthian Casuals, his budgetless wonders continue to defy all the odds. But first, let's rewind the clock. It's the mid-90s, and 10-year-old James Bracken is living every young fan's dream. He is on the books of his boyhood Premier League club, West Ham United. And not only that, he's absolutely tearing it up.
Youngest player at the time they ever took on. Ran a year above myself because they didn't have an age group for me. So I stayed there till I was 10s. I got released there through reasons that were nothing to do with my ability. A week before, they told me I was in the top three players in the whole academy. And they released me. I was a centre forward at the time. I'd score 78 goals a season.
And so begins the puzzlingly unfortunate playing career of James Bracken. For what reasons, outside of football, would a club have to release one of their most highly talented players in the academy? Our frontline reporter, Tony Banks, found out more.
You know, and I'll let you in on a bit of that. My dad was banned at the time. He was banned from watching West Ham. So he was banned. They found out who my dad was. And they basically said,
Why was he banned? What did he do?
Well, he got accused of being a hooligan.
Okay.
But never got done for anything. But right. He got accused of being that. So he had a banning order. So they found out he was my dad, said we can't have a boy at a club whose dad's banned from, and he's a bit notorious, to be fair to him. So that cost me there.
That represented the start of a run of bad luck in James's playing career that perhaps defines his embattled yet determined disposition as a manager. The second part of this hard luck story takes place some 40 miles or so west of Upton Park, within the leafier confines of the home counties in High Wycombe, Buckinghamshire. Wycombe Wanderers were the only one of the other 91 league clubs to respond to James and his father's pleas to take him on after his West Ham spell was cut short. He was offered a trial at Wycombe and made a success of it, remaining there for the next 6 years, until the day he was expected to sign a scholarship deal.
I played in their 18s when I was 16. I was captain of every age group. I captained Surrey at every age group, so in schools. And then we went... I was due to get a scholar. And it was three places, because they took a big influx the year before. I was supposed to go up there and sign. I'm obviously living in Reigate. Wickham's quite a long way. The two boys that lived in Wycombe signed theirs, and I was due to sign mine. And I turned up at training, and the head of the academy pulled me and my dad, apologised to us profusely, and told me that my place had gone. And the first team manager's godson had turned up, and the first team manager had told them that my godson must have a place. He quit within 3 months. It was too much for him. Couldn't hack it, and he wasn't good enough.
First released due to family association, then denied an opportunity elsewhere due to somebody else's family association. What was next? To complete the hat-trick of footballing misfortune, James suffered a serious injury. Here he discusses the pitfalls of balancing his time at non-league club Woking FC, his next club after Wycombe, with his day job, laying patios for his old man.
In the close season, I had a first-year sort of deal. Went on loan, done well. They said, you've got the same deal next year. We'll get you a bit more around it. And I thought, great. So that was that. And then I went and lifted up slabs at work, around a swimming pool, flicked slabs up all day over picks, stacked them. Next morning, I went to get out of bed, and I couldn't sit up. Couldn't move. Yeah. And my back was so painful. Something had gone... I knew it was badly wrong. I called him, my dad said, I can't get out of bed like dad would. Come on, mate, get up. You've got to go away. Just, you know, tired or whatever. I said, no, literally, I can't move. Didn't move. Couldn't run for 18 months. I've got a fixed vertebrae in the bottom of my spine that I got diagnosed with. So I ended up with an LS joint strain. Basically, I've had to manage that ever since. I come back playing when I was 20. Got offered good money, to be fair, to play at my local club, Redhill. It was the biggest mistake I ever made, playing that low. It's what stopped me playing. I completely fell out of love with playing.
Really?
I played for people that... I honestly didn't think I had a clue, with people that were turning up hungover, and I was still acting like I was a professional.
Sliding down the leagues after injury wasn't just upsetting for James from the perspective of his career prospects. It also represented a betrayal of the standards he'd set for himself. One can see how this deep-seated dedication to doing things properly prevails today. No matter how low the level and no matter how little the resource, at Corinthian Casuals there is to be no question of James abandoning the professionalism he demands. Amateurism doesn't have to mean amateurish.
Tonight we trained, we could have been anyone. We could have been the dog and duck. We still could have set a high standard and been demanding of the players, which we are. And you know, it makes no odds. It makes no odds.
Bracken's coaching career actually began in parallel to his playing career.
When I was 10, my dad used to run a local school football thing on a Saturday, like a little soccer school.
Where?
Dover's Green School in Reigate.
Okay.
It's literally just around the corner from my house.
Right.
And it had a big disabled unit. And I was playing at West Ham at the time, so I was quite a decent player. So he brought me in as a demonstrator. And by the time I was 13, I'd fully taken it over.
Yeah.
But, you know, my first coaching was coaching disabled kids. I mean,
right.
I had a kid that had a frame.
That
you used to move his frame, used to put a ball in front of his feet, used to kick it about a foot. But listen, I'll never forget how happy his face was.
So how did this fledgling coaching career result in Bracken ultimately taking the Corinthian Casuals hot seat? Chairman Brian Vandervelde highlighted how the link came up via his brother, current goalkeeper and captain Danny Bracken.
He was watching us because of his brother, and his father is a great fan, and indeed the mother have been supporters, and the brother was came along as a supporter, thought he could do something, put himself forward to me, and I was delighted and terribly impressed. One has only to speak to James for a very short while to understand that the man has a great talent.
At this point in his life, James Bracken wasn't just a spectator at Corinthian Casuals. He was also coaching the youth and reserve teams of an upwardly mobile Sutton United, who these days are vying for a place in England's Football League system at the top of the Vanarama National League. That's three tiers above the Casuals. There, he achieved remarkable success by anybody's standards. He hoovered up 26 League and Cup trophies over a nine-year period.
My second to last season at Sutton, we won a quadruple and a treble. I managed two teams, the 18s and the 21s. We won a quadruple and a treble. Quadruple winning team, never lost a game in all season in the league, not one out of four competitions. And someone turned around to me, because I won 30 trophies in 9 years, and they turned around to me, and the exact words were, "Yeah, but it's easy." And I turned around and I said, "Well, if it's so easy, why is everybody not winning quadruples and trebles in the same season?" And they couldn't really answer me. But because I'd won so much, you know, it was a double, a treble, a double every year, it was taken for granted.
Sutton United's youth team secretary, Gareth Miller, witnessed this extraordinary domination firsthand. And when reflecting on Bracken's arrival at the club with our man Tony Banks, he expressed a familiar sentiment about the young coach's impact.
The instinct was, as soon as he came in the change room, he was the best coach that the players had ever worked with when they come into the club. A lot of coaches you see at that age, they're sometimes a little bit too pally with the players, but he always knew the sort of difference between being sort of matey with them and being the boss.
The distinction between a pally manager and a proper boss is an important one for Bracken, as the following exchange with Tony highlights.
"I'm a far better coach and manager than I ever was a player. I'll be the first to admit that. I'm not a bad player. Got to a decent enough level. And if I'd had maybe a couple more breaks. Oh, I'd like to
of course, yeah.
I should have been a pro. I'm not saying that, but you know, I did seem to have it a little bit difficult and it didn't work out. But I love what I do now. And I feel far more comfortable standing up in there in front of them all than I ever did sitting there as one of them. None of the players here are my friends. I don't speak to any of them away from football other than football. Too many are cosy with certain players, there's little cliques, and it's we just."
But did you have to learn that as you went along? Because you know,
I think a lot of it I have.
You already had it.
Yeah, think so. I think a lot of it is just me.
You've got enormous self belief, haven't you?
Why wouldn't I? Now, how do I expect them to believe in me if I don't even believe in myself? You know, because you can see through people. When people are not real and they talk to you or they try and inspire you, you see through them. And I'm lucky enough that I don't think I've ever looked at a player and thought, "He's seen through me." So, you know, I don't know. I just try and stay true to myself. I only ever say what I believe. Even if I'm wrong, I do it honestly.
In the summer of 2015, James Bracken brought his forthright management philosophy to King George's Field, home of Corinthian Casuals. Goalkeeper Danny Bracken all of a sudden found himself playing for his own brother.
So what's it like playing for your brother then? How's that work?
I respect him as a manager. I respect him. If he was not my brother, the attitude that I'd have in the changing room would be no different. Okay. He's the best manager I've ever played for. And there's no doubt about that. The conversations continue on the way home in the car. And when we sit down in front of the TV in the evening, there's a lot more football chat than I was having before with other managers. But I like it. He can bounce ideas off me. I'm captain. I can make suggestions of what I can see on the pitch because I have a different view. Most of the time, he ignores them. but to be fair, his record shows that he probably knows best.
So, do you live in the same house?
We're both at home. Yeah,
you're both at home.
Mum and dad.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. So let's put a scenario here. You drop a clanger in a game. Right? Yeah. Let's just say that happens, right? Which it must happen occasionally. And he's fuming at you because you've dropped a clanger. And it might say it's a draw instead of a win. There's, what's he like then, and what are you like then?
There's no one that beats themselves up more than me.
Okay,
if
right.
If I make a mistake, yeah. No matter how small, if I should come for a cross and I don't come for it, and doesn't even lead to a goal,
yeah.
I'll analyse my performance because that's the way I've been brought up to try and be the best I can. Right. Yeah, he won't be happy, but most of the time he'll know that I know.
But Bracken's plain spokenness doesn't come at the cost of optimism, as Chairman Brian Vandervelde clarified.
He has a wonderful ability to pick the positives out of anything, and they're not foolish positives, they're genuine positives. He's a very fine coach. All of the players here tell us that they've never been coached in the way that he's coaching them. It's very professional, and they haven't seen the like of it before. They love that. They love the way he deals with them, the way he respects them, and he brings them on. They are better players being under the management with James than I would imagine any other manager I've ever come across, or indeed they have. He will improve them. He is a wonderful man manager. His management skills are quite incredible. Mickey Stewart, England manager at cricket, former first division footballer with Charlton. He's much impressed with him. And Mickey's come across many a good manager in all walks of life and sport. And we both have the highest regard for James. He's going to go places if he wants to.
Absolutely.
But not at the moment, please.
When Bracken arrived at the Casuals, they were reflecting on a satisfactory season. Often used to scrapping for survival at the bottom of the table in this 24-team league, their 13th place finish in 2014-15 might even have represented cause for cheer, but not for the new boss.
But it was lauded. I mean, it was the highest league position, I think.
It was for ages, yeah.
But it was like amazing.
Mm.
And I just looked at that and I thought, it was 13th. Mm. If we come 13th this year,
you'll be gutted.
I'll think I ain't good enough.
Yeah.
I'll think about jacking it in, because if I can't get as high on 13th, then I probably shouldn't be here. No, that's my opinion. But that was obviously, like I said, praised like it was a great achievement. And it is to a certain degree, but I don't think you can ever, even last year, people were saying to me, what a great season. No, it wasn't.
In the end, it wasn't. No,
it wasn't.
No.
Won't be a great season till we get up.
This isn't just talk. For now, at least, the days of Corinthian Casuals being content with survival are behind them. This is Bracken's third season in charge, so let's recap on the previous two. We mentioned in our first episode that the club was desperately unfortunate to lose a penalty shootout in the playoff final last season, with club stalwart Dave Hodges missing the crucial spot kick. What we did tell you was that the Casuals also had their promotion dreams cruelly dashed the previous season, Bracken's first, following another incident involving poor old Dave Hodges. On that occasion, it was the minefield of non-league administration that cost them dear. The story begins on Boxing Day, when Hodges was sent off following an attempt to chase down an opposition forward. The club assumed he had served his subsequent one-match suspension when he missed out on a Surrey Senior Cup tie, having been assured that was the case by their parent FA, and so the popular fullback returned to the side to the following game. What happened next is probably best explained by Hodges himself.
The ban moved on to the Wednesday, we presumed, in a Surrey Senior Cup game, which I then didn't play in, against Sutton. But the FA, so then I then played against Faversham on the Saturday, and we won 3-1. The FA then said that the Surrey Senior Cup doesn't count because it's not a home cup. Our London Senior Cup games only count towards suspension. But therefore, we'd lose the points for the game that I played in, depending on the result, and we won, so they removed the points. So then went through lengthy appeals. And, I mean, there's just no common sense. They accepted there was no mistakes, but you get put in front of three people who are, like, you know, kind of very well-meaning, kind of, like, dead-behind-the-eyes FA people. And, you know, they make a decision that ruins a season for, you know, a whole club of people who, in this case, don't get paid and have been turning up to play 46 games. And there's just no realisation in the FA of kind of the impact of the stupid decisions they make. And obviously, the rest of the players didn't find out because of the appeal process.
Right.
The FA basically were hoping that we would fall away, and we kept winning. And then eventually, just before the last game of the season, they had to announce our 3-point deduction.
That deduction meant that Casuals dropped from 5th to 6th, and missed out on a place in the playoffs by a single point.
Obviously for the players it was devastating, and kind of I think even then the FA probably hoped we lost our last game, because that really, you know, would have moved things kind of out of our hands technically if we had lost those points. But we won, and unfortunately we didn't make the playoffs, but yeah, that was kind of less my fault.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you could be absolved of that one. Well, unless you blame me for getting sent off in that Boxing Day game.
James Cotty was the player for Molesey who later joined us in that season. He played for us a few days before, and he was running through on goal, and then he slowed down at the last minute to like run in, so that I'd run into the back of him, and I barely touched him. I got a second yellow for it. It's the first time I've ever been sent off.
Is that right?
Well, in my non-league career anyway. Like, I got sent off once in five a side for aggressively muttering about me.
Sadly, Hodges recently had to end his long association with the Casuals due to work commitments. In December, he moved to India following his 319th appearance for the club. Although, as he joked, this does potentially mean that for Bracken, at the third time of asking, he's had his biggest bad luck charm taken out of the promotion equation. In any case, should the Casuals take the title this year, Hodges has already managed to rack up enough appearances to be eligible for a medal. Like all those who have been part of this squad, he hails the club's progression in recent years.
Well, I mean, it's remarkable progress. From this is my eighth season that I've played. So you take the five before that, we have gone through times when we have been very close to relegation and gone on very good runs, to times when we've kind of mid-table, never more than mid-table, I think 12th maybe the highest. And then James came in. First thing he obviously did is improve the quality of the squad. So there was about four or five people who stayed from the time I was there before. And so we always had a good 7, 8, maybe 9, never had more than that, never had a good bench. Nature of very difficult to bring people in for no money and kind of out of contacts. But James knew a lot of good young players, and he's a fantastic coach. I mean, you will not find a better coach at this level. You know, for now, Casuals are very lucky to have him. If we can finish this season by achieving what he and the club deserve to achieve, promotion to the next level, then I mean, I don't think there's many bigger achievements in football, because there just is so remarkable our circumstances to what we would achieve. It would just be quite incredible.
Hodges is not the only person you'll hear praising Bracken's ability to develop and improve his playing staff around the club. With his background in youth football and the restrictions he faces in recruiting players for the Casuals, it has become a core tenet of his management style. Presumably, this is why his players won't get an easy ride on the training ground.
Which field of foot did I take you on?
Outside.
Quiet, anyone's having easy inside touches, balls in here, and I'm stopping.
Jim Paul, you said no longer.
The only person I've seen dropped off the club. Yep, it was Ike. Only one. Out of 22 players. Alright, get the details right. Outside of your left foot now.
We're demanding. I'll certainly say I'm demanding. I don't suffer one single bad pass, and I can't bear players that play a bad pass and you have no reaction out of them. They just play a bad pass, and the worst thing they do is they play a bad pass or it don't work out, whatever, and they smile or laugh. You probably can tell it gets me goat a bit. Yeah, it's about setting a standard, isn't it? You know, if you're gonna, you know, there's a saying. It's practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect, which is true, because practice really just makes permanent. So if you practice poor technique, poor quality of passing, you get very good at poor technique and poor quality of passing. So when you get in training, you've got to try and perfect everything, you know, and at least do it as well as you can, which is what we try and apply every week.
Improving your players' footballing technique is one thing, a part of the territory. But what stood out when speaking to James was his additional emphasis on developing the personal side of his players.
Well, these lads are, you know, young men still, and a lot of them haven't had any proper guidance. Mm-hmm. Whether it be through their, you know, I'm not talking about family life, but through their dads or whatever. So when they make mistakes, I've always felt, especially with my background in under-18s football, that you have to be that person and teach them how to communicate properly with adults. Lots of factors where you can help people just realise the importance of being punctual and doing things properly and just communicating properly.
You're coaching them more than just football, you're coaching them sort of life skills as well, you know?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I've always felt that way. When I was at Sutton, I was probably the first youth team manager, or one of the only youth team managers around here, that when they got to to like under 16 in the park, and I would go and find them or get them in from pro clubs. I'd pull them in and I'd say, I now deal with you. I don't deal with your mum and dad. Because up until that age, parents get an email where the game is, what time the kid's got to be there, what he's got to wear. You know what I mean? Kids, parents pack the bag, wash the kit, sort him out, feed him, take him to the game, put him in the car, take him home. When you get to under 16s and then you go beyond that to under 18 football, you've got to then start to become a man. So the first thing I always did was, I now communicate with you. I'll give you the details. You pass them on to your mum and dad and communicate with them and tell them where you need to be. But I'll deal with you direct, help them grow up.
For Bracken, it isn't just about how you play. It's the manner in which you carry yourself, all the way down to the clothes you wear. Casuals reserve team coach John Chinnery explained that one of James's first actions when he arrived at the club was to put his hand in his pocket.
The first few things he did was get the kit, lads' training kit, tracksuits, so that when they turn up to training, they all look the part.
So before that, they didn't have their own training
kit?
No,
before that, obviously with the club's budget and the way the club struggled financially over years, we've never had anything like that. The lads have got tracksuits, which sometimes they funded themselves or managed to get a sponsor. James came in and changed sort of the mentality of the club from being a bottom three, surviving each year, to actually we could probably do something here. And it started with just a little bit of professionalism with the kit, the discipline the lads had, turning up on time, wanting to be there, being keen.
And keen they are. Player testimony is uniformly effusive when discussing James's management style.
James has brought like an expectation of winning, and there's a certain standard that we all need to adhere to every week in terms of performance and results.
Just the ambition. You know, you go to certain clubs and you can pick up a bit of change here and there, but they're not saying every week, like, we need, you know, we're trying to win. And it's just the professional manner at which he conducts himself and runs the club, I think, is exceptional.
When he gets a day off or we've got a game off, he'll go and watch a game. And he won't just go and watch a game just to show his face and turn up in his Ryman coat and look important. Mm. He'll watch and he'll take away information that's going to help us as a team. We have scouting reports. We video our games so we know exactly what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And then training is based around that. And we improve as players and we improve as a team.
He's a top quality manager, you know. He's different from the other managers in the league that, you know, they just let you get on with what you get on with.
Yeah.
They just leave you to it. But, you know, he actually wants, he brings out the best in you.
In terms of his actual coaching on the training ground, you will not find somebody better. He sets up professional sessions that you would expect to see, you know, at higher levels, the kind of level of quality of training that people are doing, to the thought process behind how you get people to do things that you want them to replicate on a pitch on the Saturday that will, you know, pay dividends for the club. And then the way he can talk to players about how they can improve their game, you know, picking up on where they need to improve, but then knowing that players are different.
So why come here?
James and Prings.
Yeah?
Because they...
That simple?
No, that simple. Literally, like, they're the best coaches I've had. Yeah, I just fell out of love with the game, like, around 22, 23. Came here, and I love coming every week. Every week to sacrifice my body for no money, just to win a game. For them too as well.
Yeah.
Simple fact.
What is it about it? What do they do? What's the secret?
Since I've been at clubs, every club I've been at, they focus on one or two players like their main players. But with James and Prings, they'll focus on everybody. That's why he gets everybody playing for them. So literally, like, he just turns you into a better player. He gives you the right information, tells you when you're doing rubbish. Simple fact, but it's actually the truth.
Yeah.
So yeah, some managers actually, like, you know, mess you about, but they won't do it. They just tell you straight away.
Okay, if you put a microphone in most people's faces and ask for an opinion of their boss, the likelihood is that they will praise rather than criticise them, particularly if one of them happens to be their brother. So let's get the view of an outsider, someone who has played the game at the very highest level, a former international who has played in the glamour and riches of the Premier League.
So I'm filming for a show which bears my name, the Stan Collymore Show, which is on RT.
It just so happened that ahead of a home game a few weeks back, I came across Stan doing a spot of filming in the Casuals clubhouse. Collymore has played for England, Liverpool and, most importantly, my boyhood team, Aston Villa. Stan made the trip to King George's Field so that he could tell the Casuals story for his own TV programme, and while there he met with James and discussed the current campaign. Once we had got our mutual Villa connection out of the way, I want to know what the man who has played for high-profile top-tier managers made of the Casuals coach.
Very impressive. We spoke to him, obviously, about the club, about the direction, how difficult is it in 2018 to manage a club with a unique philosophy in terms of amateurism and not paying people for the jobs that they do. and he has brought an incredible professionalism. So it's proof that you can. It depends how much you want to, whether it be as a player or a manager, as a coach, how much you love the game. You don't have to be paid for it. Of course, I'm sure he will want to go on and manage in the professional game and go as high as he can. Who wouldn't? But I certainly think that by talking to him, he's a very impressive young man. Obviously, his brother Danny, he's been here for a long time and knew the lay of the land to what to expect at the club.
Yeah.
But I think that cherish him while the club have him, and then pat him on the back and help him on his way, because without a doubt, to have casuals now competing towards the top of this division, which is a very competitive division, to have a manager that has a professional ethos but isn't taking a penny out of the club is quite incredible in 2018.
Nevertheless, James, from time to time, does allow himself to speculate on what he might do with a bit of money to spend on players.
If I had a budget,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I've got plenty of friends yeah. playing in the league above.
Yeah.
If I could match their wages, yeah. they'd drop down a division and play for me.
Yeah.
But when they're earning £300 a week and it's paying yeah. their mortgage and whatever,
yeah.
I can't and I won't ever ask them to come and do me a favour in that basis.
No.
So in terms of what we can get hold of and what we can't get hold of,
yeah.
you know, we've got our players and I'm very happy with them.
In fact, it has become part of the Corinthian Casuals culture to try and turn the disadvantage of having no budget to their advantage. Lack of a wage bill means no competing salaries, no accusations of greed, no moaning about wages. As Danny Bracken puts it,
we're obviously here for the same reason we don't get paid. We're here exactly. just to play football and to compete to win every game.
Stan Collymore was interested in that very same idea.
And as someone who has played yourself, do you think there's an element that actually the lack of payment could actually be to the team's advantage in that there's no competing salary?
Yes, I think that it just basically is you're playing for the love of the game. So you would like to think that people that play for Corinthian Casuals, that is the beginning and their end of their journey here. One of the reasons why I wanted to film here was how does amateurism, it's a profession in all aspects, the volunteers, the job that they do, you guys here with the podcast and the manager of the players, it's professionalism in all but name, but how does the amateur philosophy of not being paid, does that have a corrosive effect? Does it have a detrimental effect? And the answer is no, because fundamentally it's really reassuring that there are lots of young lads out there in their early 20s, mid-20s, late-20s, that want to play football for the love of the sport, and that has to be applauded.
As we record this episode in February, the Casuals continue to battle in the playoff places, within touching distance of the league leaders. But these days, there is nobody in the squad who considers this to be sufficient. Between James and his players, there is a sense of disappointment that they haven't capitalised on a strong start to the season and don't occupy two of the automatic promotion spots. But for the fans and volunteers who were around at the club long before James Bracken came in, the current team and its manager are something to be very proud of. At every game, home and away, a group of fans unfurl a banner adorned with Bracken's face. And those who give up their own time to ensure this club survives appreciate Bracken's inclusive approach. Stuart Tree is one of the most recognisable faces down at St George's. A towering, cuddly giant-style figure, often spotted with a long-range camera in hand, he is the club's press officer, photographer, social media manager and programme editor. In many ways, Stuart epitomises the culture of selfless enthusiasm that defines the volunteers of the modern-day Corinthians, and it doesn't go unnoticed by the first team, as he found out when James Bracken addressed the room at the end of the successful 16-17 season.
But the first time I really got to see his character, so to speak, was at the end of season awards dinner.
Yeah.
And he come across as very inspirational, and you can see why in the changing room he has the ultimate respect of players.
Yeah.
Because what he spoke about resilience and about, you know, just everything on his speech that he performed after dinner was almost mesmerising. And then he actually turned around and said, I'd like to give a special thanks to, and it was to me. And I'd never
really?
Had that. And
oh,
I'd
wow.
never kind of had that. And that took me back. And it was like a bit of a frog in the throat moment, you know. It was like, because he said about obviously doing the photos and everything. And all the lads, you know, love all that. So we've had plenty of players that have come along that have played for money all their career.
Yeah.
And they come into our changing room and they go, we've never known anything like it, dressing room wise. We've never known a camaraderie like it.
And so the present-day Corinthian Casuals continue to embody the original Corinthian spirit of the Victorian era, playing for the love of it without compromising sporting quality. Their amateur status acts as a bond between the players and the people around them. Whether you're scoring the goals, pouring the drinks, stocking the club shop, or tweeting their results, you're all on the same wage. In episode 4 of Broadway to Brazil, we'll be speaking to this motley crew of committed Casuals characters, from junior ball boys to elderly statesmen, peering into the everyday nooks and crannies of a non-league team, and regaling heroic tales of grounds being built, balls being chased, and cheesy chips being churned out.
Someone came down to ask me to sort out a problem behind the bar. They couldn't figure out where the money was going. And I said, come down for a month. That was 9 years ago.
Yeah, I kind of see it as like, I take it more serious than I do anything else. Like,
yeah.
I'd rather miss work and come and play rather than work and earn a bit of money, which is a bit crazy. But
no,
it's just kind of see it as my job kind of thing. It's what I have to do.
We stood over by the dugouts and the ball went out of the ground and off he trotted. Oh, shall I go and fetch that? He said.
Yeah, go on then.
And he's been fetching it ever since.
A 100-mile round journey, but I just love it. I love coming over it. I love what I do. And it's where I want to be on Saturday. I could be somewhere just round the corner. I could be sitting indoors watching telly. Mm-hmm. I want to come over here. I want to be part of what's going on round the King George's.
We'll see you there. Broadway to Brazil is presented and written by me, Yarek Zaba, with Dominic Bliss. Produced and edited by Brent Davies, with Tony Banks, our frontline reporter, in the field. Music is from John Forrest, Chris Kelly is web manager, and Kelly Bliss does our artwork. With huge thanks to everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club, to the Community Brain for use of the Museum of Futures, and to the perennially Corinthian and occasionally casual Robin Hutchinson, Tolworth's very own cheesy chips connoisseur. Broadway to Brazil is a Creative Brain media production. Find us at broadwaytobrazil.com, where you can also find our Twitter and Facebook. For more Creative Brain output, check out the us100.com.
We got four cheeses on our chips.